So today what I wanted to talk about is, was it last weekend? Anyhow, not in the not too distant future, I did a half-day workshop Saturday called Responding to the Suffering of the World. And you know, we had nearly 100 people, both in person and online, so it was a popular topic. And in the evaluations, one of the things that people said was, they would have liked a little more time to ask questions, to interact. So I want to give those people time today, but I also want to kind of summarize for those who weren't there and for those who were there, this teaching, because these are kind of very basic Buddhist teachings about the world, about the suffering of the world, about compassionate response, that I think are really very essential for all of us these days. And yeah, so it's essential. So again, I was surprised that so many people said, I'd never heard those before, even though they're kind of basic Buddhist teachings. But then, see, this is the nature of this mind of ours. It has problems retaining. You might have noticed that. So we might have heard these things, or, you know, read these things, and yet we go, "Well, I never heard that before." Which, on the other side, you know, makes everything very new and fresh. But there are downsides, and it's important for us to understand that mindfulness, meditation, concentration are just part of what is called the Dharma. Many people think, "Oh, if I just learn how to be more mindful or meditate, I can really transform my life." Well, that's probably not the case. It's a very important part of that transformation. But a lot of Buddhist teachings kind of gives us the big picture of what's going on in this life. You know, when you have the big picture, when you kind of know what's going on, when you can see clearly, then you can navigate in a much more safe way this life, let's just say. Not fall into holes, not get yourself in trouble all the time. So seeing the big picture, I think, is very important. So just very quickly, there's a lot here. So I asked people first to look at, you know, because the title of the workshop, the four-hour workshop, was, again, Responding to the Suffering of the World. And many people say, "Oh, I feel the suffering of the world," right? You know, I mean, many people talk this way. And yet, if we were honest, we would have to say, in truth, we have no idea what's going on in the world, do we? I mean, we are not omniscient. We are not present to all 8 billion people, are we? And know what's going on within each of them. Our minds aren't capable of embracing all the situations going on in the world today, are we? Absolutely not. So again, when we talk about the world, each of us, and this is deep, I'll just say it, is it's just an idea we have in our minds about the world. I mean, that's what we're talking about. And our idea of what's going on in the world and what the world is has been shaped, right? It's been shaped by the way we brought up and just a lot of our beliefs and ideas. But it's also, you know, these days is very shaped by what the media is feeding us. You know, so we get upset about this. And then a day later, we get upset about that. And then 2 days later, we get upset about this. And we worry about this and we're concerned about that. And we realize, you know, and we're all, you know, we're doing that because the news is telling us about a very specific situation, you see? And for many of us, what happens is that's the way we respond to the suffering of the world in this very, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, react. So we want to see big picture. You know, what's really going on here? So the first thing, which is very important for us to understand, that the word that we translate in English as suffering, in the Buddha said, he called it dukkha. And dukkha is much more than what we in English look at suffering. In the word dukkha, it also implies discontent, dissatisfaction, unsatisfactoriness, frustration, unease, existential angst, dis-ease. So it's big. It goes much more beyond what we think of, the suffering of a human being, the suffering of the world. And the other interesting thing that the Buddha taught was that this world we live in, this human world we live in, one of its characteristics, major characteristics, is it the presence of suffering, okay? The presence of dukkha. This is not heaven, right? Heaven is what? Is there suffering in heaven? No, as far as I know. I mean, that's what they tell us, right? So this is not, the human realm is not heaven, is it? On the other hand, the human realm is not hell, which is a realm of constant suffering, is it? The human realm, which in Buddhism is called samsara, is a mix. Okay, it's a mixed, but this is the way it is. So that's important for us to understand, because I think many of us get distorted views, and we expect the world to be heaven, or we're afraid the world's hell. But it's really neither. It's a mix of it all. Okay, now, so this word dukkha, there's a spectrum, okay? So on one hand is this kind of a very kind of mild, being ill at ease, you know, a little unsettled, a little irritated, a little anxious. You know what I mean? It's kind of light over here, right? And on the other end, it's what? Anguish and despair and raging fear and terror. Okay, so it's a whole spectrum. But all of that is involved in dukkha, right? And the Buddha said, you know, I teach only one thing, the end of suffering, the end of dukkha. So this is important. And when he talked about that, he's talking big picture, you see. So when we talk about, oh, I'm a compassionate person, I feel the suffering of the world, well, what are we talking about, you see? Because in Buddhism now, there are three kinds of dukkha, okay? The first dukkha is what we might call ordinary dukkha. Right? Ordinary dukkha means it's ordinary. It's sort of the pain and suffering of birth and death and war and poverty and violence and, you know, all the common suffering that we all agree on it. You know, Buddhists, non-Buddhists, you know, religious people, non-religious people, everybody would say, oh, yeah, this is human suffering, okay? Is that clear? And that is common suffering, the suffering we all see. The Buddha called that just the suffering of, called the dukkha of dukkha. This is suffering of suffering, kind of the suffering of the world. But then the Buddha said, there is a second kind of suffering that human beings suffer. And he called that the suffering of change. So this is much less obvious, but he said this is a big suffering, because he says, you know, everything in this world is changing, constantly changing. Everything is impermanent. And that he called them the eight worldly winds, the winds of gain and loss, of pleasure and pain, of fame and infamy and ignominy. You know, all these various winds are just endlessly blowing through life. We gain, we lose. We're up, we're down. We're successful, we fail, right? You see, they love us, they don't love us. Okay, so he says this general thing, which we would just consider what? That's just ordinary life, right? That's just the world of change. Everything changes. He said, that is a cause of suffering to beings, right? He said, even happiness, kind of worldly happiness, you know, when we're happy or we have pleasure, he said, even that's dukkha. Why? Because it doesn't last. Anybody ever experience that it doesn't last? And when it goes away, whatever that positive is, we suffer, don't we? So it's can you see, this is a very, this is a very different level of looking at the suffering of human beings. The third one, which is very hard to see, he called it the suffering of conditioning. It means that human beings, just because they're so identified with their self, they so are wanting things to be permanent and stable, right? Because of that identification, they suffer. What do they suffer? They suffer disconnection. They suffer this, the experience of not being connected to. You know, it's kind of a deep kind of suffering that's not very obvious to people. You know, that you just don't feel part of, even when you're part of. You know, even when you're at the party, you know, there's still something that we feel disconnected. We may feel connected for a little time in some kind of experience, but then we come back to this feeling of, I can only say, disconnection, this kind of aloneness, this kind of separateness. It's a very deep, you know, not obvious. But the Buddha said, all beings suffer from this. This is dukkha. So you can see there are three levels of dukkha. Is that clear? Right. And only one is obvious. Only one sort of everybody agrees on. Now, like anything else in life, you know, the first noble truth or the truth of suffering, you know, if this is just the way it is, then there's no reason for any spiritual path or meditating, just the way it is, right? Just the three different kinds of suffering. Isn't there some statement, you know, this life is a veil of suffering, right? This is all, you know, I just got to kind of endure it, you know, so we can get out, right? Be reborn in heaven or something. But this is not the Buddha's teaching. He said, there's a cause of suffering. Cause of suffering, you know? So it's not impermanence that's the cause of suffering. It's that we want things to be permanent because we attach to things. Things are not the cause of our suffering. We suffer because we think things, physical things, people, all these external things, we think they're going to bring us happiness. So we pursue them, we grasp at them, we try to hold on to them. But we can't hold on to them, can we? They're impermanent. And things cannot give us happiness. The happiness is in our mind when we get them. That makes us happy. But the happiness is in our mind, and it's unfortunately only temporary. So so it's important that we understand that the suffering, especially those two deeper level suffering, but also a lot of the suffering that human beings cause each other and cause themselves, all this self-created suffering, all this emotional suffering that human beings go through, comes out of because they don't know the cause of their suffering. When you know the cause of your suffering, right? I mean, it's so simple, isn't it? You know, again, if we look at our physical bodies, right? How do we know that we're sick? what? Symptoms. You know, we have symptoms, you know, and the symptoms, we would say, are a certain kind of suffering. I mean, they're different than our state of health or well-being, right? So we have symptoms, right? Okay. And that's what we notice. But we don't know the cause, right? Is this a cold? Is this the flu or COVID? Is this cancer? You see what I'm saying? You know, is this, you know, renal failure? I mean, I'm just making things up. You see what I'm saying? But if we really wanna, the symptoms are the clue, but it's only when we look deeply that we find causation, right? That we have an opportunity of really ending our suffering, which means the symptoms go away. If we don't do that, what are we left with? What? Yeah, temporary. We're just always dealing with symptoms, 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 symptoms. Right? Thousands of years ago, when I used to drink coffee, you know, I used to work for a living, drink coffee. I used to get headaches. Anybody ever get headaches? You know, I used to get headaches. And what did I do for headaches? No. I wasn't that stupid, but I probably did, right? But, you take aspirin or Advil, or you take all those kinds of things. And one day I just reflected, like, what's going on here? And I realized I saw it in relationship with the coffee. I read up a little bit about coffee headache. I read up about drink water, you know, and, you know, or don't drink coffee on an empty stomach. And all of a sudden, what happened? No headaches. I haven't had headaches in 30, 40 years. So why do I say that, right? I mean, I could have kept what? Taking the, you know, analgesics, right? Forever. And it would have, you know, every time I had that symptom, it would have taken away. But, you know, when I look deeply, I mean, and this is a very, not too deep, but I'm just saying, oh, no more problem, you see. Now that's, you know, very mild, but that's actually what's going on with individuals and the world. So again, having a big picture view of life is very important. So the third thing or fourth thing we looked at in the workshop was response, right? How do we respond to the suffering? And one of the things I shared, you know, maybe some of you will know this, but it's very important, that there is a difference in Buddhism between empathy and compassion. Empathy simply means, you know, I experience or I feel empathy with another human being. I kind of know what they're going through. I feel your pain, as people say. All right. But that's not compassion in Buddhism. Compassion, the word karuna, means an active desire to free, to end suffering. It's active. So a lot of times when people say they're, you know, compassion fatigue and all these things, it's not compassion fatigue, it's empathy fatigue, because they just keep taking it in, and it's overwhelming for people. But if you're active in your response to suffering, whatever it is, you don't burn out, because what you're cultivating are wholesome emotions, wholesome response, as well as you're also active, you're empowered, you're doing something. So it's a very different way of being in the world. So in the same way, there are different kinds of sufferings, there are different kinds of compassion. First, compassion is called ordinary compassion. Ordinary compassion is what? It's related to what we said earlier, was the ordinary or common kind of suffering. Okay. the obvious sufferings of human beings in the world. For this we have compassion for. And as I asked somebody to do some quick research, how many NGOs are there in the world focusing on taking care of various aspects of human suffering? 40,000. That's major ones, as well as they say there are smaller ones, regional ones that are probably another 100,000. Now, why is that? Why are there so many organizations? Dealing with the symptoms. The symptoms. Right? Why is, you ever drive around Tampa? You know, you drive around Tampa, a lot of the biggest buildings are what? 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 Bank. Well, banks, yeah, that's one thing. But I was going another direction. Hospitals. Hospitals. Everywhere. Outpatient clinics. I mean, you know. I mean, we were driving yesterday on Fletcher. You know, Fletcher, I mean, it's like one big hospital after another, one big medical center after another. And they're all dealing with what? Symptoms. What is the cause of the ill health of Americans? Why are people so sick, physically sick so much? I'm not going to go into that one, but you know, it's just like, this is what we're talking about, my friends, where we kind of go, what's going on here? You know, what is the cause of this? So the first kind of compassion, we call compassion for ordinary beings. Ordinary beings suffer. They suffer from sickness. They suffer from disease. They suffer from war. They suffer from famine. They suffer from poverty. I mean, right? I think Betsy was here. We just kind of went around the room asking people to name their, you know, the things people suffer from. And we immediately filled up one whole board. Writing very small. It's just gone on and on. Okay. Second level of phenomena I'll just go into the second one. We'll leave the third one for another time. But the second type of suffering has to do with the suffering beings cause themselves because of wrong view, misunderstanding, right? What does that mean? They see what is fundamentally impermanent, they see it as permanent. They see what is fundamentally unstable as stable. They want things to be different, right? They want others to be different. They want, you know what I'm saying? So there's a lack of understanding of why things are the way they are. There's a grasping, there's a holding on to, there's a trying to force people and situations to be the way they want, because they think if I can only get it that way, I'll be happy. But because the nature of life is unstable and impermanent and endless variables, it'll never work, will it? And human beings, so they cause suffering to themselves, they cause suffering, you know, and they cause endless sufferings to each other. Right? They make war on each other, don't they? I mean, I won't go into it all. You understand. It's called the news, you know. But what? Why are beings this way? You see. You know. I mean, here at the center, we have a lot of squirrels. You know, I don't see the squirrels all coming together and let's gang up on the mice. You know, Let's get them out of here and take over their territories. I mean, I'm not saying that animals are benign. You know what I'm saying? You know, I don't see the cardinals making war on the robins. Huh? You know, what's with human beings? So whether it's individuals, whether it's societies, whatever, there are these different kinds of sufferings, and there are a response to these different kind of sufferings. Is that clear? And they're all needed, because there is lots of suffering in this world. The question for each of us then becomes, what do I want to respond to, you see? Many people spend a lot of time responding to the suffering of family members, suffering of friends. Many people, you know, look around their community, lots of agencies responding to the suffering of people. People are supportive of other kinds of organizations, NGOs, activist organizations, you know, that are responding to other kinds of sufferings that are going on in the world, right? It's endless, isn't it? The possibilities of responding to the sufferings that the human beings create for themselves. So that's one whole kind of suffering that we can respond to, isn't it? But to these less obvious sufferings, see, because even if you know, somebody comes in the hospital or somebody, whatever, you know, and then they're fixed up and they go out, they still have to deal with the suffering that they create for themselves in life. So the Buddha said, I'm here just to end human suffering. Some suffering you can't, the suffering of change you can't end, but learning to how to be with the world of change means that we no longer suffer from the world of change. Learning how to diminish one's sense of self, one's sense of separation, means that one no longer feels separate from. You can only do harm to another human being, or an animal, or a planet, if you feel separate from it. If you feel, I'm here with my needs and my wants, and that's all an object. You see, but if your actual experience is one of connection, Thich Nhat Hanh calls it interbeing, you realize to harm another is to harm oneself, you see. To harm the world is to harm oneself and all the beings in it. So, but that level of really helping people change their understanding, their consciousness, you know, how do you help people deal with some of these fundamental things that are causing so many people to be depressed and anxious and addicted? And, you know, like what's underneath all that? You know, there's lots of treatment facilities, you know, that are very helpful, but, you know, what's going on in our society? So many people turn in this direction. What is this fundamental meaninglessness, you see, that so many beings participate in? So do you understand what I'm saying? That this is a kind of a deeper level of understanding human suffering, and therefore the compassionate response is different. than other types responding to other these more obvious sufferings. So again, this is sort of where we went. So lots of teachings and practices to help us navigate the world as it is. I found a quote from Chenzi Rinpoche, which I share with participants, which he said, this world is like learning to make the best of a bad situation. I thought that was pretty clever. Just sort of what we're doing. Why do we practice? Why do we practice meditation and mindfulness? So we can restore some level of stability and calmness within our mind. Because an unstable mind, a mind that is constantly going, is a source of suffering. So who's helping us learn how to tame our mind, how to retrain our mind? Where do we learn that? Is that compassion? So we have to kind of perhaps relook at what the suffering, what that really means. And therefore, when we understand that and we understand the cause, then what is the compassionate response? Again, compassion means to end, uproot the suffering. How do we help? How do we help ourselves? How do we help others, those we love? How do we help? How do we help this world? So, so that's a summary. So I'm open to questions. I mean, things that aren't clear about, those fundamental teachings, but also, so what does this mean for how I respond? What I do? So the floor is open. Is there a microphone? There is a microphone, so if people in the hall, just raise your hand. People online, we have people online today. How many people are online? 71 people. We have about 40, 45 in here, so. Yeah, so don't, for those of you who are kind of new, don't feel shy. If you don't agree with anything that's been presented, you can do that, say that. Challenge me, that's fine. But again, what are the implications of this? For the way we've kind of been, Dharma gives us a kind of freedom, to challenge our views. We have a very, very convenient kind of thing to remember in terms of our views, our ideas, to ask ourselves, is it true? Is it true? Do I really know it's true? I really know that the way I've been doing it is really that helpful to myself, to others. Do I really know that? Do I really know that my ideas about how to help the world are really that helpful? You see what I'm saying? It's, how many of us are willing to kind of just look at our most deeply cherished ways of being in the world and responding to the world and just asking ourselves, is it true? That willingness to be kind of open, to examine, is very much part of the Buddhist path. It's not a it's not a belief system. It's not a dogma. The Buddha taught, examine. He said, examine my teachings. Don't accept, he said to his students, don't accept what I'm telling you because you respect me or love me or you think I'm a this or you think I'm a that. Said, examine it. Examine it through your own experience. Examine it through your own, analytical, logical capacities. So the floor is open. I'm very interested in people's responses. Yes. So
the question chatted in.
Yes.
How can we best respond to the second kind of suffering, the resistance we all have to change.
Yeah. So this is, you know, first, can the first thing is, the first thing is to acknowledge. Very important. You know, I think people who are familiar with the recovery movement, right? You know, one of the things that people have to acknowledge is what? What? Yeah, that they have a problem and they have not been able to solve it on their own. it's like, you know, coming to that admission, right? Okay. So in the same way, we have to come to an understanding, right, that I've been fighting against the impermanence in the world, the impermanence of being, the impermanence of thought, of emotion, the impermanence of moment-to-moment life, of relationships, of the world, you know what I mean? I have been, you know, holding it, doing my best to hold it back. How do we hold it back? Control manipulation, right? Control manipulation of situations, of people. I mean, that's our strategy. Okay, everybody can acknowledge that we all participate to one degree or another in control and manipulation, defend and attack, you know. We're always strategizing. Okay. So, first admission is, it doesn't work. Right? Because the promise of all that, the reason I've been putting so much effort into control and manipulation is what? I thought it would what? Work. And the meaning of I thought it would work would be, I'd be a happy, calm, stable person living, you know, you see? And yet we realize, no, that strategy only agitates me. It always keeps me agitated. Everybody know what, we all know, we laugh, but we all know what, I mean, that's, so there has to be a willingness to examine the kind of way we've lived and how it's been based on this, and we're not even aware of it. That's what we've been up to. The instability, impermanence of the world, I don't like it, right? It scares me, or it saddens me, or it angers and frustrates me, you know? So I'm gonna work very hard. So that's number one, to realize what's really going on and our strategies have produced the opposite of what we thought. Now, fortunately, for those of us who are interested in Dharma, Buddhist teachings, is, you know, we, the template is here, right? We don't have to kind of, you know, leave our families, you know, go off and meditate in the wild for 6 or 8 or 10 years to come to our own conclusions of things. We are very fortunate. Other people did that, you see, and they have shared their understanding that, you know, impermanence is the nature of life. And learning to live at peace and ease in the impermanent and instability is the way forward. Is the way forward. That there is a way that one can live with stability, with clarity, with openness, with understanding, with compassion, with kindness, with patience in this world the way it is. And that strategy works. It's unbelievable, but it works. Because I will experience the sense of well-being and stability and calmness and peace of mind, as well as, you know, the capability of cultivating on an ongoing basis wholesome emotions, no matter what. No matter what. So, yeah, so we have to kind of understand that there is another path in life that works, that will give me what I want, you know, but it implies that I have to what? Let go a lot of my deeply held, cherished beliefs about how to be in the world and how the world, and realize there may be a lot of people around me, family members, colleagues, old friends, who don't kind of see it the way I'm beginning to see it. Anybody ever notice that? And that's another thing we have to accept. Okay, and be okay with. And then we, I'm just talking about one piece of it. But, another big piece is this identification with me. We live in a society that is egocentric, right? Where the emphasis is on my happiness, my well-being, my life, my, me. And we see that is the way of happiness, right? We might call it a self-centered life, which doesn't necessarily, it doesn't mean we're selfish people, but that the self is always central. It's always taking credit for everything we do. It's always our major concern. How are people treating me or not treating me? How can I get my way today? So the self is also a major part of our problem. It takes a lot of work. Anybody ever notice? It takes a lot of work to keep this self happy. Because why? It has opinions about everything. It has so many likes and dislikes. It has so many preferences. It has so many things it's attached to and so many things it's not. It wants, it averts. It's like it's just busy all day, isn't it? It wants to be protected. So you spend a lot of time protecting it. But it has lots of needs and wants and desires. So you always got to kind of keep busy feeding it. So that's the self. That's another, major issue that we have that keeps us from being happy and keeps us from feeling connected to other beings. Even people we live with, even people we say we love, it's still hard for us to really feel that we are no different than them, to feel that kind of connection, right? People say, everything is one. You ever hear people talk this way? It's all one. But do people really experience this oneness with all life, with everyone else? It's not easy. So we need to get rid of this, not get rid of it. We need to soften and make porous this barrier of self so we can begin to merge a little better into life. So that takes us, that's another whole practice. Is there another one up there? And then I'll come. Just hold on. Okay.
Is your microphone on?
It is on. Can you?
Yeah, we can.
Turn the green Zoom up.
It is.
Oh, okay.
Where to help another from the first level of compassion is obvious, a doctor or a nurse.
Yeah.
Can you give a specific example of how to help another who needs the second level of compassion?
Yeah, So first thing is what? First thing is we need to, okay. So the question is, sorry. So the question is sort of how to help at the first level of suffering is more obvious, but how do you help the second level? Yeah, that's more difficult, right? The reason we're here at a Florida Community of Mindfulness listening to talk is because we are interested in learning a deeper way to be. And we are learning how to kind of look a little more deeply into our own suffering so we can really see what's causing it and realize there's another way to be, right? So the one thing that we all have is we have freely made a choice to look further in our life, to look outside the usual context of the way we were raised and the way we were taught to think, right? I mean, we're here because we are investigating. We are searching, right? We are looking for something. And everybody's different, right? So, you know, there's a kind of interest or readiness in perhaps learning new things, looking more deeply into life. Unfortunately, you know, people who are born into a culture, a society where these types of way of looking at things are part of the culture, don't have to go find it, right? So a lot of these ideas that I'm talking about are in the culture. Understand? So that's why, I don't know if it's still true, but that's why a lot of times traditionally people will go to Asian cultures, Buddhist cultures, and say, wow, you know, remember, you know, people are kind of peaceful. You know, it's like, it's kind of a peaceful culture. Like, but they don't understand it's peaceful because everybody, the educated, the uneducated, the literate, the illiterate, kind of these ideas are kind of generally in the culture. So, you know, in America now it's different. So what am I trying to say? Yeah, I think, you know, in Buddhism, compassion and action has two aspects. First is appropriateness, right? So this person, whoever they are they ready to receive some information that would point them to look a little more deeply into the causes of their suffering? Has anybody here ever given anybody advice? Just wondering. Just all, you know, all kinds of advice, you know, even, you know, it's things that are so obvious to you, like you ever thought of just stopping doing that, or why don't you eat better, you know, why don't you stop eating all that junk food, or you know what I mean? Have you ever kind of made these kind of innocuous, kind of simple statements to people? And everybody says, thank you very much, and they change their life? Right? I mean, so what do you notice about beings? Are they all open to change? Are they all open to your wisdom and your great advice? So the first thing is appropriateness, right? In other words, do I have somebody who is open? Right? Do I have somebody who is ready to receive some new information? You see? I mean, that's very important. Right? So first is appropriateness. So in Buddhism, we say, compassion without wisdom doesn't work. It's just sentimentality. Right? So our compassion action has to have some intelligence, some wisdom, some insight if it's really going to be successful. So that's appropriateness. The second part is skillful. All right. So I have somebody who appears to be, you know, open to maybe looking at what's going on here a little more deeply. Right? Now, how can I really be skillful to help them? To give them the right kind of information at the right time that it sinks in. Is that easy? No. So again, empathy is not that difficult, right? I mean, to feel empathy for someone who is suffering, a family member, a friend, or, you know, or just somebody you encounter, you know, you're aware, you see them suffering, you feel empathic. But helping them, you know, to find that compassionate response that actually will be helpful, can take some reflection, you know what I'm saying? And perhaps takes a little trial and error. You know, I mean, we're not omniscient. We can't see into the minds of every person and know exactly what's gonna, you know, move them along. So, you know, my sense is you always go in slowly, right? Always go in slowly. Just kind of test the ground a little bit to see if they're really open. I mean, do you ever find there are people you know who tell you the same miserable sob story day after day, week after week, year after year? Anybody know anybody like that? Right. And you think, wow, there's anybody who's ripe for change, it's this person. And yet when you suggest to them some other way of perhaps responding or dealing, what's the response you get? I see a lot of nods. What sort of response do you get, Abdullah? What kind of response do you get? Defensive. I mean, it's like, can you see? It's like, okay. I mean, there it is. So even though you may go, wow, they're suffering. Well, it's so clear, you know, they're suffering. Right? I mean, try telling an addict or an alcoholic that alcohol is the cause of their problems. You ever try that? Not too happy. You know, until they get to a certain point, you know, and that's, so don't, you know, don't waste your breath. We spend a lot of time wasting our breath, right? Because we're good-hearted, you see, we're empathic, we see somebody suffering, I mean, I understand. But yet when we step back, it's like, no, they're not ready. You know, they're not ready to hear it, okay? So I can still, you know, I can still be kind, you know, to them, help them in any way they can. Okay? Thank you. The woman in the back.
So basically, you answered a lot in that second.
Okay.
That was the obvious, to me, an obvious question.
Right, yeah.
So on your commentary, I guess I have a question about saving my breath.
Yeah. That sounds a little harsh, doesn't it? But go on.
Because I think, you know, you have someone, you know, I'm just going to say, I had a conversation with my sister-in-law right on along these lines.
Yeah.
Why is my life the way it is? Blah, blah, blah. And I tried,
she's saying this, she's asking you.
She's coming to me.
And as coming to you as if she really wants you to help her.
Yeah.
With questions. Okay.
Yeah. Why okay. isn't, why, I've lived a good life. I've always tried to help people.
Yeah.
So, you know, I said, well, you're, you know, anyway, I shouldn't go. My point is, you know, she kept coming back with, well, that was how I was raised. Well, that's how I was raised.
Yeah.
And I started to suffer because I didn't feel like I was getting through. And I sort of, the last couple of days have been working with the fact that when you want to be compassionate to someone, you have to give up outcome. I had to give up that I may not create an outcome right now, but I spoke appropriately of the Buddhist mindset of impermanence and suffering, and I hopefully planted a seed.
Okay, so you're her. Right?
Yeah, because
let's let you and I have fun together.
Okay.
So you're her, right?
Yeah.
And you've just been telling me once again how unfair life is. That she's been a good person, she's done all these good things, and yet why do these things keep happening to her?
Right.
Right? And you try to gently point her in other directions, and she tells you what? She says to you, just the way you told me, she says to you what?
That's the way I was raised.
And you know what? See, I'd say to you, exactly. Yeah, we're all a product of our causes and conditions. I understand that perfectly.
Sure.
But did you ever think that somehow knowing that these way you were raised is very much conditioning you and it's producing unhappiness for you, that you can change? Okay. I'm sending out a trial balloon. See, I'm giving her a trial balloon. I'm giving you a trial balloon. I'm just suggesting, did you ever, you see, my language is very open. Did you ever think that even though meet people where they're at. She's telling you. You see, this is the problem. We don't listen to people. She's telling us what? I cannot change because I am fixed. Fixed, not, you know, fixed like I'm permanent.
Right.
The way I was raised, I am permanently going to be that way, which is the antithetical understanding of Dharma, which is what? That everything is change. The whole idea of having a transformative path is that we can change.
Right.
Okay, but, you know, you get that, Lydia. She's over here. So you just want to give her a little trial balloon. Did you ever consider that possibly, even though that's all true, you see, you don't want to argue with her. Once you get into arguing, you're lost. They become defensive. You never want to get people in defense. You want open. Yeah, that's really true. Yeah, I. So that's one way. Another way is to use your own example. And to say, oh yeah, I understand that. You know, I used to believe the same thing. I used to believe that I was fixed, that I'd always be the way I was. But it's interesting, over these last couple of years, I've kind of learned, you know, that I can, you know, work with my, you know, we call it conditioning, you know what I'm saying? You know, and that change is possible. See, that's a wonderful message to give somebody. And that's a very common belief in our society that I'm fixed, that I'm a stable, permanent thing and I can't change. What happened to me in childhood is the way I'm always going to be.
Right.
You see? So you kind of listen. She's telling you where she's suffering. She's suffering from this fixedness.
So I think, you know, I basically stop talking at a certain point because I don't know the next, I don't want to do more harm, so I stop.
Yeah.
And then I think, well, hopefully she's seen me go through somewhat of a transition. So hopefully my life is somewhat of an example. But she may or may not be paying attention.
She may or not. See, the trouble is we don't know anything, Lydia, especially when it comes, you know, with the other human beings. I mean, it's hard enough just to be self-aware of our own stuff.
So that's where I'm pointing out the fact that I had to come to the point where I cannot look for an outcome. I have to just keep trying.
But again, don't keep trying the same way. I'm trying to show you, well, there could be another way. And I'm not saying it's going to work.
Right.
See, but I guess what I'd suggest to people is go in slowly, give a little trial balloon. See if they, you know, it's like, I hate to say it, being somebody doesn't like to do harm to animals, but for those of you who ever know about anybody who fishes, right? You know, what do you do with, you know, with the bait? How do you catch a fish? You what? You bait. And the bait has a hook. Right? See, you'd like to hook your sister to help her.
Right.
Okay. But first you gotta get her to bite. So you gotta give her something that looks a little nourishing to her. See? In her life.
Right.
If you fish, what do you know? You know, different kind of baits, different kind of fish, different kind of lures, you know, right? That's what, you know, it's.
Thank you.
Yeah. But again, you know, this is the creative part of being a compassionate person. You know, it's creative, you know, how can I help this person? How can I help this world? You know, I mean, many people are still trying to help the world the same way for decades and decades, and they never stop and go, am I really helping anyone? Or have I just contributed to more problems in the world, more divisiveness? I don't know. But it's worth looking, asking ourselves these questions. Anybody else online? Okay.
Yes. Could you repeat the third aspect of compassion and action? You explained appropriateness and skillfulness. Someone didn't hear what the third aspect is.
I don't think I said a third aspect. Usually compassion is just appropriateness and skillfulness. Generally, that means the word for those who are interested is upaya. Yeah. And so often in Buddhism, compassion is called upaya, which means it's a skillfulness of how to deal with the suffering of human beings, the suffering of the world. You know, and it has these two parts, the appropriateness and the you know, it's sort of like the art, the art of compassion. You know, you may have the kind of basic skills, but then how do I apply it? You see what I'm saying? Like somebody may have a profession and they may have a certain knowledge of professional, right? So that's kind of your background. But then how do I apply it in this situation? You see, that's a different kind of mindset. Yeah. I'm looking at somebody who's a dietitian. People come to you, you have all the answers, don't you? I mean, you can help them, can't you? If they're willing. You see, so that's, so you understand. It's really the same understanding. It's like, you know, if they really don't get it, that somehow diet has something to do with their process of healing, or, you know, it's like, so it's, I mean, this is not esoteric. It's kind of basic. Yes. Online? Oh, no. Okay. In the hall. Just wait.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. Hi, I'm Karen, everybody.
Just hold it like this.
Up here?
Yeah.
My big thing is how to have compassion for somebody that's in your life that's extremely close to you. For example, my mother, we don't, and I have to do all of the bonding, all of the calling. I don't get called back.
Yeah.
I don't, and it's like to the point where I don't even. Today's her birthday, so I have to call.
Today's what?
Today's her birthday, so I have to call. But
maybe somebody else could call for you.
I was like, I don't. Is it? Am I not being?
So let me help you. And I didn't mention this, but again, there's a lot to mention. The thing about the first kind of suffering that responds to the obvious suffering is it's very conditional and it keeps moving around. You know. Right? Because now this one's suffering and now that one's suffering and this one doesn't seem to be suffering, so I won't be compassionate for them. I'll be compassionate for the ones who are suffering, you see. So we're always picking and choosing, you know, like many of us, we feel naturally compassionate for who? What? For the sick. We feel naturally compassionate for our family and friends, often. The elderly, you know. We often feel compassion for people who we agree with, right? Do we feel such compassion for those who we don't agree with, right? We feel compassion for our friends. We don't feel compassion for our enemies, okay? So the first kind's a very conditional kind of compassion. The second and the third kind of suffering allow us to be compassionate to everyone. Because we understand, right? That even though your mother has probably maybe not been the best of mothers, perhaps your mother's been, in your view, a terrible mother, a harmful mother, right? So that's obvious, you know, probably most people, if you shared the story, they'd agree with you. But you see, at the deeper level, you go, yeah, she suffers. She's caught in the world of self. She suffers because she was conditioned a certain way by her family and upbringing, and she's never been able to get out of it. And all she can do is just keep repeating. Okay, so you understand? So that's why in Dharma, it's that level of compassion which is so important, because it allows us to be compassionate for everyone. To see they're all caught in it. You see, like in the world of taking sides, we have a war going on in Ukraine, right? It's either like you're pro-Ukraine, you're pro-Russian, right? I mean, there it is. But from a bigger level, they're all suffering. They're all suffering. Which is a, can you see, it's a very different way of being in the world. I mean, it's Yeah, so hold on. So you're saying, yeah, you got to keep talking. So you're saying it's very difficult. No, it's not. You just listen to her. What does this woman need? What does your mother need? Just right at the level she's at. What does she need? No, but what does she need from you today when you call her? Yes. Yeah. See, you know it. Stop. Yeah. You're supposed to be talking. Yeah. So she says, yeah, I know what my wants. If you let go of your agenda, self, if you let go of your agenda, if you let go of the story of the history of you and your mom and the kind of mother she's been and shouldn't be and all the things she's done, if you could put that aside, not easy, and just sink. Hold up your microphone. Oh. Okay, yeah. Okay. Hold it up.
Yes.
Ask you some questions.
Yes.
Is your mother fundamentally a happy person?
No.
Does she have joy and equanimity in her life?
No.
Does she suffer?
Yes.
Is she unhappy?
Yes.
Is she angry?
Yes.
Is she sad?
Yes.
Is she lonely?
Yes.
Are you a compassionate person? Can you see? When you look at it that way, you go, she's a suffering person, my mother. She's a suffering human being, right? And sort of like Lydia's, you know, she's stuck in it. See, most people are stuck in their conditioning. They don't see outside it. That's your mom. She suffers. She's sad. So what's going to make her happy today?
Wish her a happy birthday.
Mother, I love your mom, right? And you sing her, you wish her a happy birthday, you tell her you love her, you sing her happy birthday. And you ask her if she got the present, right?
Yeah.
Is that all she wants from you today?
I'm assuming that's all she wants from me
right,
today.
Right, so you start there, and maybe she, you see, but it's very hard for us to be that way if we're still carrying the scars and the wounds and the stories from the past. Very hard.
It's really difficult to let go of that baggage that you carry,
you know,
and say, no, I don't want this baggage.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, hold on. Okay, yeah, hold it up. I'm not done with you yet.
Okie cokie.
Yeah. What is your name?
Karen.
Let me tell you something very interesting.
Yes.
Carrying that baggage all these years, that's hard work. Putting it down is easy. Just put it down. Just let it go. Just a story. Just something you hold on to. Even you defined it. You said it's baggage. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know. You know, it was like, getting on an international flight with a lot of excess baggage. I mean, you know, pack lightly next time. You know, get rid of that excess baggage. You want to, you know, your mom just a suffering, just see it differently. She's just a suffering being. Mm-hmm. You know, did she give birth to you so she could cause you suffering?
I certainly hope not.
You certainly hope. I, you know, yeah. I mean, it may have not been the best reasons, you know, but you see what I'm saying? But she probably didn't, you know, conceive and go through pregnancy with the idea is, when this little being comes out, I'm going to do everything I can to screw them up. You see? If that was the case, then I would say, yeah, she's really is a sick woman. I really feel bad for her.
Yeah.
But she just didn't know better. She doesn't know better. She doesn't know another way. And sentient beings, they just don't know another way. That's why we say they're deluded. You know, they're just lost in their delusions. They think this is the way to be. And you see, it just produces unhappiness for her. You can do it. Just put it down. It's easy. Holding on to this stuff is hard. That's hard.
Yeah.
Every day, every time you have to think of her and interact with her, kind of remembering all the terrible things. It's hard. Hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is easy.
I shall certainly try. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, just do your best.
Thank you.
Are we done? Oh, do you have a quick one? Well, but essentially it's what? Hold on. We have lots of people online. So just give me the pith of your question.
So in the relationship that you all have brought up, and you're very beautifully saying, you know, put down the baggage. But if you continue a relationship, a mother, you, she'll always be your mother, a spouse will be your spouse for as long as you decide to do that,
yeah, yeah.
Right? But if it's difficult, even when you do put down the baggage because of trauma, then what's the attachment there, or how do you get past that?
So you're asking me what? So in a relationship that there's a lot of toxicity or pain or suffering, how do you let go of it?
Yes, if you can approach with compassion, that goes hand in hand with the putting down the baggage. Do you continue?
Well, that's, hold on, good. Right? So you realize in this relationship, I suffer because I hold on to all kinds of things from the past. It's just preventing me from really dealing with the situation with clarity and understanding. Okay? That's what we want to do. So it doesn't mean you don't act. Is that clear? But you act from the present. Okay? So if I put down all the baggage, which doesn't mean I haven't learned anything about the person, but I'm not going to keep going over the stories and the this and they did this and didn't do that. Okay, now I'm here. And there's only one question. What do I want to do? You see? Is there a path forward? Right? Or do you feel there's no path forward? Do you understand what I mean? I mean, but that's, those are big decisions, right? And you want to be as clear of baggage as you can be to make a clear decision. So it's not as if you just put down the baggage and continue to be in toxic relationships. You know, if you said to me, well, every time I call my mom, she just lets me have it and brings up every terrible thing I ever did, and you know what I mean? And I'd say, you know, call her up, wish her happy birthday, sing her happy birthday, say, bye, mom, I gotta go. You know what I mean? It's not like you have to submit to abuse, you see. You know, if there was a reason, you know, you see, but it's, yeah, so I'm, please understand, is that, thank you, you asked that question. I mean, it's not like you, I mean, you want, you know, we want to really delineate the wholesome from the unwholesome, what's good, what's not good, right? And act accordingly. As I often say, you know, a black snake and a rattlesnake are both snakes, but you act very differently around them. Right? So don't give up your intelligence, your discernment. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. So thank you, everyone. We'll end now.